Once more unto the breach, dear friends. Else close the wall up with our English dead. Welcome back to a second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. I've got a caller waiting, and I'm going to just jump right over there. So caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Jeff from South Fork, Colorado. How you doing?
Great. How are you? How's the weather?
Well, it's kind of chilly. I had to wear a jacket. It's in the 50s. I just started a fire and had breakfast over it, steak and eggs and bacon and fried potatoes. I know that you'd hate to hear that.
This is horrible stuff going on up there. Horrible.
Well, we're out here stimulating the economy. I tried calling you on the other number. I don't know if you can, if I can get through on it. I can.
I don't know. Maybe the light doesn't flash when you call on that number. I don't know.
Anyway, I thought I'd ask you a question.
What's your question?
You know, the yield curve is inverted.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturing is in a contraction,
mm-hmm.
starting to lay people off.
Yeah.
And we got all the indications out there that we're headed towards a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And the market went up for the week. Why? Yeah.
Good question. This is part of what I was planning on talking about. So this is a fantastic instigator. Started last hour talking about what causes recessions, how they build up, why they're normal, why they should be considered just a part of the market. When we look historically about bear markets, well, when do they happen? Bear markets aren't always caused because of issues with earnings or with the underlying corporations. Bear markets and bull markets can be completely based on market sentiment. And right now, the sentiment of the market is still based on where we've been rather than where we're going. And that's a good place for it to be. The fact that we're looking back and saying, hey, if we just tweak a little bit, if we just tune up the engine a little bit, we could keep running at full speed as long as we want. Let's just do that. And every rumor, hint, miscue that says, hey, we're about to tune up the underlying engine, we're going to take away these things that are slowing us down, causes people to remember the last decade. We've had 10 years of growth. It's been a relatively slow growth. But that's true in each of these cycles. When we have the yield curve invert, you've said this before, typically we have about 15% upward movement in the market before we get the bear market. And I find that to be so, it's counterintuitive, but so is the rest of the market.
Well, it's delightfully irrational.
Yes, delightfully. That's just like all the people involved. Anybody that claims otherwise is irrational.
You and me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, then we're perfectly rational.
It's an irrational thing to claim to be rational. So we're going to claim to be rational.
Would you believe that here in Southport, Colorado, I have met two people so far who routinely listen to our radio show?
Wow. I didn't realize we had listenership up there.
Well, actually, they're from Texas. They're up here all summer, and they listen to the radio show.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do they listen to the radio show while they're in Colorado?
Yes.
Well,
on the web.
Now I'm just going to have to speak with envy in my voice for the people that don't have to go outside for 100-degree weather.
You know, I've said for years that the definition of success in Texas is you don't have to be here in the summertime.
Yeah, and I repeated that definition on your behalf during the first hour. You have obviously reached a level of success that is difficult to obtain in the state of Texas, which is not being here in the summer.
Well, I'm only not here a month out of the summer, which means I'm a one-third successful.
Well, how is your beautiful wife doing up there?
She said to say hello, and she is doing wonderfully. She is delighted to be here. One of the reasons I'm late coming in is because I built her a fire, which took me to the blog for Virginia.
You didn't what?
I didn't use any paper or anything. I just did it with wood and a match.
Wow. Did you say the Boy Scout oath before you began?
No, but I felt impressed about I've done that up here, so I've accomplished something. You're talking.
Oh, you're breaking up really badly.
Did you already talk about the market?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. You talked about the economy and the Labor Department.
Yeah, I ended the hour last hour with talking about the Labor Department and what it meant underneath. I've got some more to talk about that this hour. If you want to throw some of your pennies in, no more than two. 2 cents only.
You want me to call you back on the other number?
Yeah, I'll look for it. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'll call you back.
Okay.
All right, so we have our traveling... Our traveling host in Colorado, who hopefully will be calling back on the other number any moment, but I'm trying to figure out. Aha! I think we've got it. We've got a flashing. All right. Can you hear me? How about now? Can you hear me? Well, how about now? Can you hear me now? All right. I don't know what else to try, so I'm going to have to hang up there. All right. He's trying to call in on line two. We got engineer in place. I think it's set up still for the last program where here we got him. Let's switch. All right. All right. You should be on the air. Hello. I hear your voice. It's amazing. Oh, did it go away? Are you there? I heard you for a moment. I don't know what happened. Okay. We're just going to assume he'll try to call back. All right. So I'm going to go back to where I was last hour. I was talking about the recession cycle. From the end of a last recession going forward, businesses get started, businesses already exist, and are building on the after a recession. You have this cheap products available, cheap resources available to build things up. They're cheap because not a lot of people are buying them because we were just in a recession. As that continues, you're able to offer a product that hasn't been offered before at a low price. You start hiring new people to meet the demand. Other businesses are doing the same thing. They're building up their manufacturing, building up their sales force. So, and there's a lot of people available to be hired because they're unemployed because of the last recession. So as you start hiring up that labor pool over the years, the price for labor starts going up. The price for the goods that you're using to manufacture your end product goes up. And that's okay because most people have jobs now and their income's going up. So it's okay for the prices to come up a little bit. But you still want to get the best prices possible. So you start looking ahead and building up an inventory of items when you see a trend. Hey, these things are going up in cost, so I'm going to buy a bunch of them now instead of buying them on demand. The danger there is if the price on that item drops suddenly later. Now you've got a big inventory of something you bought at a higher price, expecting even higher prices, and now you've got to sell them at the high price that you bought them for just to break even, while your competitors don't. Or if your competitors made the same mistake, it means all the prices went up at the same time, and it could be that your customers are going to slow down on the buying. Well, that's the beginning of the next phase, and we've got, hopefully this is old Baldy back on the phone again.
Are you there, sir? Caller?
I am.
Oh. This is not old Baldy, but that's okay. Who is this?
Well, I just wanted to call and offer you a compliment. I know that's probably not legal, but I thought it would anyway.
I get complimentary parking sometimes. They always tell me how good I look.
Well, you better hold on. I'm fixing to compliment.
Oh, dear.
Well, when you're talking about recession, you are not a fearmonger hollering recession coming, the end of the world coming. You're just explaining that recession is the natural ebb and flow of our economy.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't fall on your sword because somebody mentions recession.
Right. Exactly.
I'm just... I just wanted to compliment you for that.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I have said I've floated my stick, now I'll turn you loose.
All right. I appreciate that.
All right. Bye.
That was a good call. Free of charge, complimentary call. That was Khan, and his program comes on after this one. Common Sense with Khan is good stuff. Stick around. All right, so where we are in the recession cycle, where it is a cycle. If you think of a big wheel, and that it's just turning along a timeline, at some point there's a recession on that wheel, because where we are right now, wages are up about 3%, a little more than 3% than they were a year ago. Hiring is good. We are at a population employment rate that is literally at the I got a dial tone. We keep the experiment going to figure out if we can answer line two. All right. Did it work? Are you there? Are you there? Oh, whoa, I don't know what that is. All right. I'm not even going to try anymore. Because it's there's an engineer in here, and hopefully the next time he calls back in, we'll be able to hook it up. But okay, so the recession cycle is coming along. You've got successful businesses kind of across the board. They're still making good earnings across the board. And now we've got another caller. I'm hoping this is Jeff, so I keep interrupting myself. A caller on 773-1400, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
This is Jeff, and I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me. So the wonders of modern technology apparently aren't great.
Yes. Well, it's the wonder of not being able to be heard. So you could hear me. It was almost the same as having a radio.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Most of the listeners can't talk to me right now. Oh, they can, but I can't hear them.
Oh. Well, that's pretty interesting.
Were you able to catch it all, the subject line that I was on?
No, but tell me about it again.
Okay, I'm talking about the cycle of the recessions. That they're normal part of the cycle, and that we are now at this mature place where we've hired a lot of people. Wages are up 3.2% versus a year ago. Bonuses, commissions, people are getting paid more than they've been for a long time. We're at a labor force participation rate of 63.2%, which is really high for this point in history, because there's a lot of people moving into the retirement world. To have that much of the population of the labor force participating is astonishingly good. But because wages are up, it means prices are coming up. And all it takes is a sneeze at this point to knock us over into a recession. All it takes at the company level, you're creating something you've been making for a decade, people have been wanting it, you've got your workforce all packed up, but now you've got to give everybody raises, the prices are going up on this, you've got inventory build up because you wanted to avoid the really nasty prices later on, so you bulk up now, and now people don't want to pay the price that you're asking. So now you have to take a step back and say, where do I cut? This is why employment is a lagging indicator. Having the level of employment that we do today is based on the success that we've had for the last decade. We've been building and building and making decisions. But if you look, I mean, kind of across the board, you may know this better having just traveled. How much does it cost to eat at McDonald's right now?
More.
When was the last time that McDonald's and Taco Bell and Burger King raised the cost in their menus? And the answer to that is pretty staggering. What's that?
When was it?
It's about 20 years ago.
Huh.
So we're seeing this is the hallmark of inflation. We're seeing it written around. This is when the Federal Reserve typically would be raising interest rates. And people say, well, you're going to put us into a recession. Well, the job of the Federal Reserve isn't to prevent recessions. It's to prevent inflation. And sometimes you need a recession to prevent inflation, because you can get a really, really nasty, long-term, barely growing economy based on inflation that has been given a wonderful term during Jimmy Carter's era of stagflation. And that's what we would go to if we don't raise interest rates in a typical recessionary period where prices are coming up. This period is different. And that's a dangerous thing to say. We've got extra ingredients in the pot. The trade war is here. But all those ingredients are doing is augmenting the existing stuff that we've seen for a long, long time. It's just a slightly different flavor of the same stuff. It's raising prices faster. When we hit a recession... Go ahead.
You saw something. You looked at the labor report that the down buried deep inside of it. Manufacturing productivity decreased 2.2%.
That's correct.
And yeah. They started their labor force.
Yeah, they're cutting labor force. And we had a net positive 3,000 new jobs in manufacturing, but it was based kind of on a fluke, and we're likely to see that revised downward. There's still some really good, strong stuff in the numbers, but that you're right. We're in a manufacturing recession right now.
Interesting thing, it was just buried in the revision of the second quarter GDP. I don't know if you saw that. But the 2.6% increase in second quarter labor costs across the economy. That's not annualized.
Right.
That is one quarter. And you run that out, and that's obviously a 10% increase in labor costs that we could see, along with a decrease in productivity and manufacturing, which tends to lead the way of 2.2%.
Yeah, and that's an important number I haven't even covered, and that's the productivity drop. So if you want to fill in on that, it's a really important thing.
Productivity technically went up across the economy in the second quarter, but manufacturing went down.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things we mentioned in the newsletter, is the fact that the services side of it, because basically two sides of the economy is manufacturing and services. And the services side of the economy jumped rather dramatically in this last month. But there's a lot of indication, if you go down to the fine print at the bottom, that they are, the reason they jump in activity was they're building up, services you wouldn't think would build up excess inventory, but they are. They're actually building up inventory in the services sector.
Right.
And so they're keeping people busy buying stuff before the tariffs hit.
Right.
We really won't know until October, November what's going on.
And then we won't know what's going on in October and November until December or January. We're constantly walking along backwards. Where have we been?
Except for the bond market.
Except for the bond market. The bond market is looking ahead and saying things look scary. And there is a danger coming ahead, too, on the bond market. I would say that the bond market, I'm looking at the stock market, I would say it's fairly priced. I wouldn't be surprised to see some run up before we see a recession. The bond market is getting dangerously close to what I would call a bubble. What are your thoughts on that?
It's kind of hard to tell. The fact that people have made a lot of money, and particularly longer-term bonds, because interest rates have dropped. And interest rates dropped to the point where we got a 2% 30-year treasury.
Right. It's not going to drop a lot more.
This is the thing that people are kind of anticipating, at least that's what I've been reading, the anecdotal sense of listening to people, is if Europe and the rest of the world is in negative interest rates, if we went to negative interest rates, then if the interest rate on bonds goes to a negative point.
Yeah, you're breaking up a bit.
Sorry about that. But the point is that the issue of people buying, betting on U.S. going to negative interest rates is what they're doing right now. And that is a little scary. And there's a liquidity problem that we really haven't seen work out.
Yeah.
That the bond market's trading ability is thinner than it used to be. This the bottom, you know, the last we think about recessions being led by stock market, but in this recession could easily be led by the bond market.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And what you said about liquidity, part of the reason why we're seeing these high yield savings positions pop up that are 2 or 2.3% when the 30-year treasury is at 2% is because banks are scrambling to get deposits on hand for short-term liquidity. The reason why interest rates are up on the short term, it's supply and demand. There's not enough money on deposit to fit that short-term need. And so the banks are willing to pay you more to get that on their books. And it's worth looking around because typical account, bank account right now is not going to pay you any interest. But they have these things called high yield accounts, and they're FDIC. Just make sure they're FDIC insured, and then make sure that you have below the FDIC cap. But then you can have a higher percentage rate. The reason why they're offering that higher percentage rate is not because suddenly banks became sweet and wonderful, loving, cuddle-hugging groups of business people. They're short on short-term cash. Everybody's going to the long-term, which is why the long-term interest rates are dropping, because they don't – if you think of it in the term of a loan, you go out, you say, I want to get a loan, and there are 15 companies trying to give me a loan. I'm going to have them auction between each other to get the lowest rate. That's what the long-term rates are doing right now. Everybody's dumping money into long-term bonds. Something that we like to say is anytime you hear someone say everybody is doing something, you should probably not do that thing. And that's what I'm saying about the bond market being on a bubble. We're seeing people making bets that the United States' existing bonds, not bonds that are being issued newly, but the existing bonds, market rates will drop. They're like their yield to maturity or their market rates will drop to a negative number. And that is a – it's an interesting bet. It might happen. But if
it – already happened with the longer-term bonds, with the interest rate drop that we've seen in the last several months.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a bond today, you're buying it at 106 to 110.
Right. So if
– you're going to lose 10%.
Right, and if it's – so your yield to maturity is an important factor here. Most people don't understand the bond market very well. But if you have $1,000 that has an interest rate, but that $1,000 value fluctuates, you bought it from somebody else for $1,100 or $1,060, then you've got $60 above what you're going to get at the end when it matures. You paid in more than you're going to receive in principal. Now, if the interest rate is worth it, that's okay. If you're getting enough interest back that it pays you the money, but now you're paying taxes on principal. If that first $60 you get back is money that was your principal, and you still owe taxes on it because it's interest. So there are some complexities there as well. The municipal bond market, I just saw a headline that is part of the reason why I was approaching the bond market as saying there may be a bubble here, is that a major economist is saying that the typical relationship between municipal bonds and corporate bonds is irrelevant now. Because the interest rates on municipal bonds have dropped to near nothing, while corporate bonds are still, based on history, at a pretty normal level. And they're saying, well, that's just simply because people are going in because they see the growth in that market that's based on the dropping of the interest rate. So that the problem is that the reason for the growth is because more people are buying, not because they're better products. They're not better quality than they were before. Just more people are buying them. If you got in at the beginning, you're going to make a lot of money if you get out in time. And then the people that come in last are always the ones holding the bucket.
Amen. That's certainly true. You notice again, you probably already said something about this, that the 30-year bond, the treasury bond, is yielding 2.032.
Right.
And a one-month treasury bill is yielding 2.044, which means that If you loan your money to the Treasury for 1 month, you have a higher interest rate than if you loan for 30 years.
Yeah. Now, the fact is that you only get 1/12 of that 2%, but if you just, the interest rate itself on an annualized basis is higher at the short end, which is a very severe inversion, very severe. And I said a joke last week that probably fell flat with our listeners. It's an economics joke, which generally means it's going to fall flat with most people. Was looking at the yield curve based on last year, so I had them overlaid, and it looks like a mirror image from a year ago. Where it was going up a year ago, it's going down there now. Where it was down, it's up now. So I've been saying that the bond market is narcissistic. They're just looking at themselves in the mirror, and it's making them feel better. And of course, that is a total nerd joke.
Well, yeah, but it's an important joke. It's a nerd joke, and nerds are very important.
Right. The fact that we've had it so drastic that it happened in such a short period of time, I've been digging back in this. To have a full inversion of a magnitude to make it be the mirror image of itself 1 year later, I cannot find another point in history where that's happened that drastically, that quickly. And that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means I can't find it.
Another thing that you can't find in history is the predominance of negative yields across Europe.
Yeah, that is something that we have no records for, except that they exist. The real records actually do exist, that they're not kept in the same way. In fact, this is something that in this search, negative interest rates are how banks were made. The original banks, they didn't pay you money to have money on hand. You paid them money to keep your money secure.
Yeah, you're right.
And they didn't call it a negative yield. They didn't call it a negative interest rate. It was just a fee to be in the bank. And then as more banks developed, they started having competition on who gets the money. And over time, they were like, you still have to pay us a fee, but I'm going to give you a toaster now.
Yeah, I remember that.
And eventually the toaster went away and so did the fee. And then they started paying interest. And so just think of it as toasters. And they're trying to get you to stay. So when everybody together says, hey, we're going back to the toaster model, we shouldn't say, this has never happened before. It's never happened before measured like this.
Well, it's never happened before with government bonds.
That's true.
You know, there haven't always been government bonds. The government bonds have always paid something.
Not always. U.S. government. U.S. government. There's some
U.S. government bond, right?
In the 1600s, there's some really fascinating things that happened with government bonds.
But the U.S. Treasury wasn't issuing bonds in the 1600s.
No, it wasn't. There were no bonds that were constitutionally protected anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
It was on the whim of a king or queen.
I guess you mentioned that Germany is officially in a recession now.
I have not mentioned that. I intended to, but I have not. They are in a recession. It is official. And they don't even have the Ember.
They don't have the what?
The Ember, National Bureau of Economic Research. How do they know when they're in a recession? They have some kind of German version of it.
The market organization and the folks who do the ISM have all said that their manufacturing and services sectors are both contracting right now. So that's pretty good. And by the way, there's another thing. And admittedly, this has been only a relatively limited period of time. We only got about 50 years of data on this. But Germany has never gone into a recession. We didn't go into a recession.
That's true.
That's enough. We usually lead Germany.
Yeah, they led us in the Great Depression, though.
Yep, they did. And you probably also mentioned the 25 or 27, depending on who you read, of the 130,000 jobs that were created last month.
Yeah, I spoke about that
for
already.
The census.
Yeah, for the Census Bureau, the once in a decade hirees.
but we only really created 100,000 jobs.
Now, that being said, it still met employment, it met population growth, but it's right on the edge. And with wages up as high as they are and the labor force participation rate as high as it is, it's pretty clear that we're at full employment. We're seeing, 3.2% increase in wages over a year ago when inflation's been running at 1.8, 1.9.
The other thing is we've never seen the Federal Reserve cut interest rates when wages start going up. In this case, they jumped to 3.2%, which is a lot more than they've done in the past.
Right, right.
And it's pretty certain that the Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates, which means something's going on.
Yeah, this is a new use of Federal Reserve powers when wages are going up to cut interest rates. But the reason is that if they don't cut interest rates on the short term, it will never be profitable for a bank to make a loan. And that's without being an obscene interest rate on the bank loan. And the reason is, if a bank gives you a mortgage right now, and the averages are right around 3.5 to 3.7% for a 30-year mortgage right now, if they give you a mortgage for those 30 years, they're going to lose money on that mortgage. They're not going to be able to sell it easily, and they're going to lose money over the next 30 years, or at least that's the commonly held opinion by bankers. So they're really reluctant to give these loans that are at this rate that has been set by the market. They helped set that rate, but they're reluctant to give loans at that rate, which is why we're not seeing the massive refinance boom that you would expect to see with interest rates. We're seeing new refinances, but they're very slow and not anywhere near as many as you would expect.
And they're hard to get.
And extremely hard to get. You really, really, really have to prove a lot of things to get this loan because they don't want to. They don't want a loan that they're giving that they're either going to make almost no money or no money on to go bad. There's no reason for them to put the money at risk for 30 years for no profit if it's really at risk. They want to make sure it's not going to be at risk when they make the loan. And that's
prices look like they're going down. I don't know. Year over year, they're not down, but they look like they could be going down.
Yeah, what I'm seeing in the housing market is places like the West Coast, the highest density areas, the prices are up, but sales are way down. In lower density areas, the prices are coming down and sales are down. So in the highest density where people are really, really proud of the fact that, you know, they got in 2 years ago and it's already doubled in value, they're still raising the prices that they're asking for, but the number of people buying has dropped. And the rest of the places that haven't seen that kind of growth are saying, hey, I got to cut off my price or nobody's going to buy this. And that falls under the same category of most people, when they buy a house, they get a mortgage, and it's really hard to get a mortgage right now. It'd almost be worth just saying, all right, give me a 4.5% mortgage and just let me have it. But that is...
They don't do that.
No. We want to give a market-based negotiated thing that we don't actually want to sign papers on.
On this trip, it's been interesting talking to people. I've talked to a guy who builds houses, and he was talking about the fact that the cost of pouring a concrete slab has doubled in the past few years.
Yeah. I mean, the cost of a hamburger at McDonald's.
He said it's not because the price of concrete went up.
It's the price of the people pouring it.
And first off, he can't get the truck out there to get the job done quickly enough, and he can't get the right people to finish it out. But the whole process of building it is going up at an amazing speed. So the price of lumber is down. The price of the materials is sometimes down, so the steel's up. But he said the labor shortage is killing him.
Yeah.
He's about to get out of the business.
The labor and truck shortage, although it looks like we've come through that truck shortage and now there's too many trucks.
Well, the issue is not a matter of there's not enough concrete trucks. It's just you've got to have somebody to drive them. You've got to have somebody to regulate it as it comes out. You've got to have somebody to smooth that concrete. You can't wait till tomorrow if somebody doesn't show up.
Yeah, and that's the point. We have too many trucks, and still not enough truck drivers.
So we're still running into everything. Everything seems, at least from my limited point of view, to point to the fact that we're tipped over the top, and even if we're right, which we could be or could not be, we'll start to see employment start to suffer about 2 to 3 months from now.
Yeah, and I would expect to start to see that, just because wages are up so high, and earnings. You know, earnings have not been as high. We had some pretty good earnings come out, but as compared to what kind of growth rate we've seen in the past, it's not growing at the same rate. It's growing much slower because they've got more expenses. They've got to pay more people. And the fact that we have as many people hired as we do means that there's a bunch of people that a couple of years ago would have been considered completely unhirable that have been hired. We have had an increase in productivity kind of across the board, but in very specific areas, we've had drops. And those areas with the drops are the places that have had the highest hiring. And that's, again, rational in that you take your best people off the line to teach them how to have them teach the next person how to do it. So they are not being as productive as they were. They got to teach somebody else. And the new person isn't as productive as the old person by any means. So you have a drop in productivity while wages are going up, which means for the company in a manufacturing environment, and that's where we're seeing productivity drops, some in the service sector as well. When you start to see that, it means it costs more to make each product. Each item that goes out costs more to the company. They're going to get less profit because they had to pay more, you know, twice as much for employment and got lower productivity. That is another just sign. When you reach the edge of your ability to expand, it causes a lot of extra inefficiencies because you're still making decisions as if you could grow next month, as if we could hire more next month. We're going to still try to make these sales. But now it's harder, and you've got people working overtime instead of people with extra time on hand during the normal work week. And that means you got to pay them more. That causes the prices to start coming up on everything.
Speaking of overtime, I bet you got some commercials to do.
I sure do. I was about to say that. Thank you very much for the call from Colorado.
Well, you're welcome. It was very pleasant speaking with you. I miss you.
I miss you, too. I am glad you're there, and I'm glad I'm here, although I would also be glad to be there.
I understand it's a little warmer there than it is here.
It is. It is. It is slightly on the Inferno scale.
Well, okay, take care. I'm picking up the same, by the way, I'm picking up the same messages very consistently from people out here who have businesses in Texas. They can't find enough employees.
Right.
And several of them have been commenting about the fact that they're being asked to, they are in wholesale business, and they're being asked to absorb the increases in prices that are being generated by tariffs.
Yeah.
Because the people they sell to, the stores, and in some cases the builders they sell to, can't afford to raise the prices. Or whatever it is they're trying to sell won't sell.
Right.
And so the guy in the middle is feeling the crunch, and that's going to eventually blow up.
Yeah, it'll eventually. Go ahead.
It was good talking to you. I'll let you get out of there, and I'll let me get out of here and let you get back to work, okay?
Okay. Enjoy yourself.
All right. I'm going to try to. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, that was nice. This is another side effect of having a radio program with my father. My partner and my father is usually Saturday mornings are the time where we get the most uninterrupted time to talk to each other. We work in the same building all through the week, but we're working, not talking. So it's nice to have that. You guys got to participate like usual. I'm going to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. The phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back. And I'm back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure. Usually Jeff McClure is present and he just got off the phone. Well, I'm going to finish off that piece on the recession cycle, because I think it's really important. Con called in and said, thanks for not making it into a dire prophecy or doom and gloom. What is it about a recession that is needed? When you have people that you've hired that don't meet your standards as a business owner, and if you're a business owner that's been around for very long, you know what I'm talking about. If you've managed at all, you know what I'm talking about. At some point, you've got to have a reason to cut loose those people. And if you never have a fall in profit, it doesn't matter how efficient you are when you're doing your work. If people are going to pay you whatever price you ask, then it'll go on forever like that. That's kind of the runaway inflation model, is that as long as everybody makes more money, everybody could spend more money, and nobody's actually making any more money. It's the same. So the reason why recessions are needed by the economy is to clean out the inefficiencies. We do a lot of stuff that doesn't work very well. And the only time we stop to fix it is when we're not running so fast and are so busy that we don't have time to fix it. Recession is a good time. You lick your wounds. Some of those wounds weren't the cause of why you fell down, but you can still make them better. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was saying that all we got to do for the infrastructure... that's beside the point. That common sense with Con needs to be on your program more often. And I'm looking forward to his program coming up.
He's a good guy.
And I think you guys need to hire him for whatever, a couple hundred bucks, and tell his wife he's out fishing or getting hay to the cows or whatever. He's the best guy in this Bella County area.
Oh, I'm sure he appreciates that. I know he's a good guy from any perspective. Appreciate the call, sir.
Thank you. Him and Ed's okay. and Carson Law Firm, all of them, they're all trying to save this county.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for the call.
So I'm just going to wrap that piece up on recessions. If we don't have recessions, you know, this it's unfortunately become political, and we'll touch that right at the end. If we don't have recessions, then we get pure socialism. Everybody's got a job regardless of if they're good at what they do. They get paid, and as long as people are willing to pay them, they keep their job. In order for us to say we're in a merit-based economy, there has to be merit. We have to say, not based on fairness, based on activity. This person is producing more than this person. That's the incentive to want to work there, is to continue to get a pay raise because you're doing a better job, not just because everybody's getting a pay raise. And that's the concept. This is why recessions are needed, because otherwise you have complete inefficiency. In effect, you have the government, where you're not hiring based on how well someone performs, but rather some other set of criteria. Well, they're filling this spot. And yes, hiring them was a tough move. We've got to pay for their whole salary, but we had enough orders on hand that whatever little amount of work they were able to put into it actually made us some money. As soon as the sales drop, you start seeing the cutting of the workforce. That's not fun. It's not fun for the person getting cut or the person cutting, unless the person cutting is really sick or the person being cut is really sick. The reality is that people take a long time to make the decision to lay people off. Usually they wait too long. Usually they wait too long to hire back. Right now it's really hard to hire, so they're waiting too long to hire because of market conditions rather than because of anything else. The politics of it, and we've got another caller on 773-1400. Let me finish this last bit. I've been struggling to get it done. The politics of it is, anytime you have an election season, it is in the best interest of the opposition party for there to be a recession, and in the worst interest for the party in power. What influence they have over whether or not a recession happens probably was 3 or 4 years in the past. There's no way that we can make a recession stop if it's going to happen in a month. We can't stop it at that point. It's too late. There's too much momentum in the hiring and firing, in the earnings and in the supply chain for that to change. So you're going to hear people giving insults about patriotism. You just want us to be in a recession because of fill in a political reason. The reality is that we need recessions just like we need to go to sleep at night. If you don't, you may get more work done for a while, but eventually you're not going to get any work done at all. And that's the point. Recessions are like sleep in the cycle. We need it so that we can get rid of all of that extra buildup nastiness that's built up. And yes, it does have political consequences, fortunately or unfortunately. It's just the reality. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, Uncle Grandpa Mark, Colleen Forehead. Exactly what you're saying. General Motors did that to Flint, Michigan, Genesee County. 13 plants there, up to 15 plants in their peak days.
Right.
And now there's only one or two left. And they build up and then fall out.
Right. It's a business cycle. This is based on, you know, whether or not you're buying a GM car, and that whole planned, the 1970s is a good time period to look at the concept of planned obsolescence coming into the manufacturing of cars. Well, let's make sure this thing fails in 3 years so they buy another one. Well, that is not a good practice.
No. You got it right on top. You and your partners are doing a good job.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate the call. And
General Motors down to 1-2 plants left in that little Genesee County.
Right.
Shame, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a shame. It's a shame because
a spark plug was 100 and some plus years there. I made a million spark plugs in during wartime per day, per 24 hours of AC spark plug pumped out. A million spark plugs.
Yeah.
Being offline, just regular, only 800,000 a day.
Only.
And they tore all that nothing but flat land and up for sale.
Yeah.
Flat land demolished.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way of the cycle. And it's not the fault of the employee.
I was listening to you, and I was doing a number of things, working on stuff in the garage. I just had to get back in there and agree with you on that.
Well, and I appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much for the call.
You bet. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, the business cycle isn't just in each business. It's broad. It's also very tiny. The whole idea in a market is you should never expect to make a profit unless you're creating something of value that people are willing to pay for at the price you're asking. That's just it. If you're not making things people want to buy, you shouldn't make a profit on it. If you're making things that people want to buy, but you're charging too much for it, you're not going to make a profit on that either. And that's the business cycle. When we get to the point where it costs too much to buy a product, we don't buy the product. And assuming that our income isn't going up drastically, because that's not true. Somebody that wins the lottery, they completely forget about price tags, which is why the average person that wins the lottery doesn't have any money in 3.5 years. So this concept of price tags being important, money, no matter what people say, money is always an object. Unless someone is completely removed from the process, eventually they will have no money left if they go around thinking money's not an object. So at the business level, that's true too. Money's no object. Look at all this money. And if you've got people that are used to looking at their own bank accounts and then they start looking at the company bank accounts, there's a lot more money in the company bank accounts. And you could get the easy impression that there's no way we can get rid of all this money. There's no way that we'll ever have anything that will hurt us so much that this won't be enough. They just need to expand their understanding of the situation to the size of the company rather than the size of their own personal finances. And that's really important. That expansion process usually takes place slowly over a person's lifetime. They start out making the lowest amount they ever make in their life, and usually over time they make more. Not always, but people that put effort into improving themselves will make more over time. And that causes their gut feeling over what's the right price to change with time too. If that doesn't happen at the corporate level, you get terms like burn rate on startups. Burn rate is amazing. That is literally the term they use for how fast they're spending money, burn rate. And if you just think of what the word burn means and you think of an incinerator with money going into it, why would you ever invest in a company that's giving you statistics on their burn rate? Some people do and make a lot of money, and a lot of people do and lose a lot of money. And we're about out of time for the week. Thank you very much for listening. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we do give through the fiduciary firm, fiduciary investment advice for people of high net worth. The phone number to call, it's voicemail on the weekend, is 254-947-1111. Or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to the webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There are recordings of the radio program going back quite a few years. We've got newsletters, my made-for-radio face, beautiful stuff, our philosophies up there. I recommend going, and you can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com.